So I've been watching something on Netflix lately called The World's Most Extraordinary Homes. Yeah, you've seen it too. Oh my gosh, it's a guilty pleasure for sure. I don't really know why, but it seems that when I need something mindless, I gravitate towards shows about baking or shows about other people's houses. Anyway, in this show, we are taken to a mountaintop desert in deep in the desert of Arizona, or to a tiny island in Norway, and we visit these lavish homes with sweeping vistas and stunning architecture. The hosts of this show are positively giddy as they skip around the bedrooms, opening the doors that lead directly into this protected forest in New Zealand, or over in Portugal, swimming laps in a second floor pool whose acrylic bottom opens to a courtyard below, and talking about the light that dapples on the surface. Anyway, it's really quite lovely to be transported watching this show. And of course, as you may imagine, everyone talks about the great lengths that these homeowners have gone through to manifest their vision. They have to, often they're building these homes in remote places and there's no infrastructure. So there's shots of helicopters bringing in these massive concrete slabs. It's unbelievable. They build roads, miles-long roads, to get to the places where these people want to build houses. They use dynamite to blast huge craters into the earth. I can't even begin to comprehend the wealth that's on display here, and I suppose that would be a topic for another sermon about shouldn't all this wealth be shared a little more somehow? But anyway, This is not what the point I'm getting to in this sermon is about vision. And for me, this show is an example of kind of vision in its most extreme sense. It's a testament to how a vision can come to life when someone apparently has limitless access to resources. So, but what about the rest of us here on Earth? What about our visions? We generally actually have to stick to our budgets, and we can't just triple the budget or throw the budget out the window. We have big goals, but it's a long slog to accomplish them. Sometimes it's hard enough to just get by in our current circumstances, let alone manifest our dreams, manifest some vision that we may hold dear. Honestly, sometimes the day-to-day struggles could be even a deterrent to having a vision at all. So this show helped me understand something about vision, which is our theme for worship this month. I realized that the kind of vision that I yearn for is not a castle in the sky fantasy. It's not a home on top of a mountain in the desert of Arizona, a spare no expenses mansion in the Alps, but rather, I need my visions to be rooted in reality. I need a version of vision that reaches not just the day-to-day, but honestly, I need a version of vision that can speak to the hard times when I'm struggling. And that's what I'd like to talk to you about today. What helps us through those hard times? When we feel like we can't even see our hand in front of our face, let alone maintain a hopeful vision of the future. So, when my baby was a brand new newborn, we spent a lot of time feeling around in the dark. I mean this both figuratively and also quite literally. Eager to follow any program to promote baby sleep, we had it on good authority that babies need it to be pitch black at bedtime. I don't know. So at night, we would do everything in the dark. I would nurse her in the dark, rock her back to sleep in the dark. Okay, that's fine. But also doing things like finding midnight snacks, finding that glass of water that I'm sure I put somewhere, finding swaddles and diapers. All of this was in the black of night. I was so desperate for sleep. And there was no reason to believe I would get any sleep anytime soon. In the dead of night, I literally couldn't see, and also I had no vision of my life beyond this sleepless confusion. It seemed like I would just bounce a crying baby in the dark by myself forever. Kind of bleak. During this time, I held on to three solid gold pieces of advice my friend gave me. My friend is also the mother of young children. And her first piece of advice was, feed the baby. This is good stuff. Maybe not super applicable to this sermon, but I wanted to tell you what the first piece of advice was. The second was, do what works until it stops working. Yeah. This one reminds me of many of the conversations I have as a hospital chaplain. I work at Brigham and Women's Hospital, and I have conversations with patients and their family members, and we talk about one day at a time, or even one moment at a time. And in these instances, it's not a truism. It's necessary. It's necessary for getting through some of the things that people are facing, serious illness and difficult treatments. So we tackle what it is that's right in front of us. We try to just stay present and keep breathing. And I bring this up because I want to honor the fact that sometimes we simply don't have vision. And that's okay. We don't always have space for it in our lives because we're just dealing with day-to-day survival. We're just doing what works, and we'll just figure something else out if that stops working, right? So the third piece of advice that my friend gave me about having a newborn was, this too shall pass. I'm sure that's familiar to almost everyone in the room. And this advice really let a little bit of light in for me. There I was, bouncing the baby in the endless night. And even though I scarcely believed it, I would say it over and over to myself, like a mantra, this too shall pass. And it gave me a little space to imagine the future. Someday I'll sleep again. I'll take this kid to the park. I'll show her some of the wonderful things this world has to offer. It was hard. It was hard to have that kind of a vision of the future in such a bleak, difficult night. But imagining this too shall pass, that just cracked the door open just a little bit so I could have a vision of something beyond. When the light first goes off, when you're first enveloped in the shadows, you can't see a thing. But as you know, with a little time, your eyes adjust. And it is the very fact of being in darkness that makes us more sensitive to what little light there is. When we are immersed in darkness, we develop more powerful vision. This is the beauty of night vision. Anne shared a reading with us earlier, the poem Sweet Darkness by David White. This poem invites us into the dark, invites us to try to find our night vision. He writes, "When your eyes are tired, the world is tired also. When your vision has gone, no part of the world can find you. Time to go into the dark where the night has eyes, to recognize its own. There you can be sure you are not beyond love. The dark will be your home tonight." I love the idea that this poem suggests, the idea of making a home in the dark, the idea that I'm not beyond love, even when I've journeyed into the deepest, loneliest nighttime. But this poem leaves me without a concrete answer as to how I'm supposed to be assured of that love. What exactly is it? I want to shake the poem. Tell me, what is it that will help me return to the promise of vision and freedom? The metaphor that I was talking about earlier, the metaphor of night vision, suggests that the night itself strengthens us, gives us the power to see our way through. And then sometimes, if that's not enough,
When there's not even a sliver of light to make out, we may take comfort in the idea that this too shall pass. It is darkest before the dawn, we are told. But what if the night is lasting a really long time? What then? This too shall pass, but it's just not passing. So I'm going to tell you another story. Several times a month, I'm the overnight on-call chaplain at the hospital. So this means that from 5 p.m. until 9 a.m. the next morning, I am the only chaplain there. So I do evening visits with patients, and the hospital is full of people between 5 p.m. and 9 p.m. These are visiting hours. So there's all kinds of people around, and I'm saying prayers with people before operations that maybe I have in the morning, speaking with people, I'm talking to staff, I'm talking to patients and families. After all that settles down and the sort of people start leaving, it's 9 p.m. and things start getting a little more quiet. And at that time, I retreat to the sleep room, which is deep in the belly of the whale, as my colleague calls it. This is a windowless room, and it's tucked in a corner of a maze-like corridor in the hospital's main tower. So I'm welcome to try to get some sleep, so long as I turn my pager on loud enough to wake me up if someone needs the chaplain. The first time I did an overnight shift, it was a very long night. I couldn't sleep a wink. The thought that the pager might go off and the feeling that I was completely alone, I was the only one who would have the responsibility of responding to that page. Yeah. So I felt very isolated in that sleep room. I startled at every sound, and I couldn't kind of settle in to the night, and it was a very long night. But after doing this a few times, something shifted in me. Something opened up and allowed a little bit of light in to my long, dark night alone in the hospital. I lost my fear of being alone in the hospital because I realized it was quite the opposite. I was far from alone. That building is full of people, people who are dedicated to caring for their fellow human beings. We are on holy ground together in the hospital all night long. The ground is made holy by our care for one another. It's still difficult, of course. I'm called to accompany people during some of the very toughest moments of their lives. But during these long nights at the hospital, I have found my answer to the poem's question of what exactly it is that holds us and carries us through the dark night. What it is that takes us back into the land of promise and vision. And this is the very fact, simple and yet complex, the very fact of my being a human among other human beings, my place in the human family. And I have witnessed the faith of the people that I meet as a chaplain. For many of them, it is the love of their families and friends, and it is their faith in God that provides them hope, vision, and love through this longest night. Our story for all ages this morning suggested that we know night has ended when we can see our neighbor's face. I agree with the moral of this story, that we should emphasize our connections rather than our divisions. And I would add that it's important for us to feel the power of our common humanity, even when it's dark, to know we are surrounded by friends in the nighttime, not just once dawn has broken through. As members of this UU congregation, we have entered into a sacred covenant to care for one another, to join one another on life's difficult and beautiful journeys. So let us uphold one another's visions. Let us rest assured that even if at any one time we ourselves may be in the dark and unable to maintain a vision of what's to come, maintain a vision of hope in the future, let us rest assured that we have one another. We have one another's visions. Let us be there for one another when we are struggling. Let us lean on one another while we wait for the long night to pass. May it be so.